Hey, Lock this is Rick.
She just cut you off.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron here. This is the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show coming to you live.
And this is your number one guy, your icon, the legendary Tornado Tony Pennycal.
And we have a couple special guests tonight. We have a guy that calls himself the Fight Nerd, Matt Kaplowitz. He's going to be talking to us about the MMA community in New York. Just put a pretty big film out there. We also have the producer of the film that worked with him in relation to 9/11 and the MMA community out there in New York City. We're going to have both Matt and his producer, Colleen, on the line about this big movie. And he'll tell us more about that when we get there. And we also have Vicente Escobedo, the guy who was in training a few weeks ago when we were trying to track him down for a story, or not for a story, but for an interview. And he'll be on the show. He's facing Rocky Juarez. I believe the date was September 23rd in a big showdown. But the biggest boxing showdown in a long while is coming up this Saturday, the 17th. It's finally here. Floyd Mayweather versus vicious Victor Ortiz. And a few other decent fights on that same card that I'm looking forward to.
Looks to be a pretty good card. So I think I'm going to... I'm not sure what the plans are this Saturday. I know my one friend wants to go to our first haunted house of the year. I'm like, dude, it's September 17th. Yeah, they're open. Okay. I have another party invitation, but I think... And I have some other friends. They're like, hey, man, you didn't get to celebrate your birthday last weekend because you were sick. I've been sick for about 3 consecutive weeks. But if you're feeling better, we need to go out for your birthday. I said, you know where we need to go for my birthday? In the basement. I got 114 bottles of liquor down there and a couple cases of beer. We'll get some pizzas and we'll watch the fight.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yes, I sound like an old man, I know.
So how old are you now? Or will you be?
20. No, the birthday was a couple days ago. 23.
23, yeah, right. You wish.
Yeah, well, not how old you are, it's how old you act.
Are you actually getting to that age where you're sensitive about your age? Is that what you're trying to say?
Nah, I really don't give a shit. I just like to bust on people because when I was 17 years old, I looked old enough to buy liquor and, I was able to go to the liquor store and buy bottles of vodka. I didn't even drink at the time. I was just going there and get shit for my friends. I got served at 17 at the Nationals in 1997 down in Annapolis, Maryland. I was 20 years old, and I walked right into the one bar to watch the De La Hoya Whitaker fight. Got served the whole night. In fact, a bunch of us under the age of 21 did. I think as long as you had like a boxing jacket on, they were serving you down there. I turned 21, but here's the thing. I will still get carded to places. I bumped into a girl. She actually boxed for Lock Haven. My last semester there, when I was kind of student coaching, she was a freshman. So I kind of trained her from the start. And nice girl, and she did well. I bumped into her about 3 or 4 years ago, down right by my house. And she looked at me. She was, oh my God, you look exactly the same. I mean, exactly the same as you did in 1998. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I am 35 years old. Some people think that I'm in my mid-20s. And, why you look so young for your age? I'm like, well, and I'm going to give you this tip of advice because I think it's going to help you out, too, as you're in a few years and you're so younger than me. 2 things that are going to help you out. One, you have to have a natural immaturity. Where people, when you act like a Billy Madison type of character, and people think you're just such a goof that you can't possibly be as old as you act.
Right.
So that's one. Or older than you act, I should say. Then the other thing that's worked for me well is a product called Albaline. Albaline is a skin moisturizer. You find it in your local pharmacy. And a lot of people use it as a deep cleansing for moving. But I used it ever since I was 18 in boxing down in the gym because it would make you sweat more.
No, it keeps your skin moist.
Your skin, it makes your skin glow.
We had you in stereo there for a second since we're on air.
If I was in stereo, you should tell me I was started singing.
Well, I was on a little bit of a tape delay.
Wow.
A 10-second delay, so it's not quite stereo.
Ooh.
But anyway, yeah, we have quite a bit of news to talk about, of course. We had the whole Nick Diaz situation unfold last week where he was taken out of the fight with George St. Pierre, and now he's being matched with BJ Penn. So he's not thrown out of the UFC like I thought he would be. Even though he talked a little smack, they're keeping him around, and they're going to make him face Carlos Condit now. I mean, Carlos Condit's going to face GSP, and then Nick Diaz is supposed to face BJ Penn. So they're basically switching opponents for some reason. We'll see. But Nick Diaz came out in the news this week and was really slamming the whole reaction by George St. Pierre, like he's expecting George St. Pierre to be up in arms about changing opponents, and he wasn't. But I think that's just George St. Pierre being George St. Pierre, to borrow the line from Manny being Manny. Manny got arrested this week, too. That's in the news. They're beating his wife, speaking about fighting. But anyway, Nick Diaz, yeah, he's out of the GSP fight and in for the BJ Penn fight. So we'll have to see what happens there. BJ Penn was kind of outspoken, too, this week because he mentioned something about how the UFC, when they were filming the new episodes of the preview shows to make up for the changes, they asked him to say, "I'm going to beat Nick Diaz." You know, they pretty much made him say that at the end of it, and he was kind of flustered about that and trying to put words in his mouth or whatever. Not that he's not confident that he's going to win, but he would have said it differently. Anyway, also, the Ultimate Fighter 14 season is going to be debuting next Wednesday, and there's going to be some twists. Each winner of three separate awards for the whole season, as voted by the fans, will get a $25,000 bonus. And, of course, just like the cards, it's going to be for the fight, best knockout, and submission of the whole season. So I think they're trying to transition into the FX features that they're going to have next year when the Ultimate Fighter switches over to the Fox Network and starts the season on FX next year with a live feature. Number one, it's going to be live fights on the show. And then number two, there's going to be fan voting of all sorts on that season. So we're going to see a big changes there. But this next season is pretty interesting, too. We're going to have two divisions of 16 fighters each. And each fighter needs to win an elimination bout to earn a spot on the official cast. And additionally, there's no wild card second chance selections. Any loss is the end of the road for the fighters unless there's an injury replacement. And it's going to be a two-hour episode next Wednesday, September 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern. So check that out. And all the regular season episodes as well as the December 3 live finale are part of the broadcasts. I don't know what that means. What's going on? All right. Dana White is also making the news again for his attitude towards Strikeforce. We had the Strikeforce Grand Prix heavyweight tournament there get to the finalists over the weekends. We had four guys, two fights. Not very exciting, not very, explosive, I guess you could say, as far as the fights go. But it was definitely unexpected to see Daniel Cormier come in. Even though he's undefeated, he came in and replaced Alistair Overeem in the tournament and knocked out the big man, Antonio Bigfoot Silva. Knocked him out cold. And it was pretty impressive. That was probably the best fight of the night. Then we had Josh Barnett and Karatanov. And that was a pretty much a sleeper fight. Nothing really impressive there. Barnett dominated as everybody thought he would. And so we have Cormier versus Barnett. But the big news was actually the lack of press. And Mo Lawal, King Mo, he's known as, came out and said some really nasty things about the lack of press and specifically mentioned Dana White and how he didn't help the matter by promoting it as much as the UFC could with their media arm. And they have been putting out newsletters and stuff with Strikeforce events included, but apparently not much. Not much more than that. So I guess there wasn't a very good crowd at this event either. I barely tuned in at the end of the show to see the middle. I think it was just starting the fight, the Cormier fight. And it was pretty impressive. Looks like Cormier is going to be out for a while. I don't know if it's going to push back the final. But he looks like he broke his hand punching that big head of Selfis. So it's looking like he's going to have to take advantage of that UFC plan, the medical plan there. It's definitely a situation, though, where not only did King Mo speak out about this the press coverage issue, but Josh Barnett, who is actually in the heavyweight Grand Prix, said he was disappointed too. But Dana White, in Dana White style, talked back and said, "If Mo, whatever the F his name is, or any of those guys think I planned all this shit this week, they're out of their minds. Yes, we signed Overeem and made the Brock fight. Do you think I expected Nick Diaz to pull this shit? We have all kinds of stuff going on, and I don't need this in my life," White explained. "It is what it is, and I never had a thought in my mind of fucking with Strikeforce, but I promote the UFC 24/7. So kind of, I guess it's maybe saying business as usual means that's Scott Coker's job, not mine, to promote their own league. And maybe since they haven't really abided by that whole principle of business as usual, maybe Strikeforce is expecting a different story in the UFC to pull all the weight now that they're second fiddle and they're basically a UFC property. But Lawal was pretty much adamant about his side of it. I don't know what happened with Diaz, he says, but it's not like he was speaking his mind saying, "I think this press conference is dumb." He just didn't show up. Now speaking out and telling the truth is a different story than not doing something that helps the fight. That's on Diaz. I think he's a hell of a fighter, but like I said, here we are talking about Diaz instead of this event. And when Lawal was asked whether or not he might regret not towing the company line by complaining that the event didn't get the press or backing it should have, Mo said, "I don't give a shit. I'm going to speak my mind. What are they going to do? Say, respect the organization, you're going to be out forever? Get the fuck out of here with that shit. I'm just keeping it real. Make sure you put that in there." So it's going to be interesting. I definitely think the betting lines on whether King Mo is going to end up in the UFC are going to reflect those statements. I doubt they'll give him a chance after him saying stuff like that. That's pretty much a red flag that if they bring him into the UFC, he's going to be just as outspoken, and he's not going to play their games like they are used to having their fighters play. Switching over to a little boxing news. We had an interesting story I just caught today. Were you wondering what was going on with Nikolai Valuev? The
You want my honest answer?
Yes.
No, not really.
Not really. Well, it doesn't appear that he's coming back to boxing anytime soon. The last I think I remember hearing about him and talking about him on the show was when he had all kinds of surgery going on. And he was out for a while, but expecting to come back. Now he is actually hunting for Yeti in Siberia.
Nice. That's awesome.
Maybe he wants to fight the Yeti. I don't know. But maybe he thinks he's related. No idea.
I was going to say. One guy that writes for Ring Magazine, Jim Bagg, and you know, he does a lot of sarcastic, he just like rants and raves on there, and it's more like a humor column. It's always sarcastic, and he described the value of as a Wookiee.
Well, he actually been interviewed about this, and he says he wants to talk to the Yeti about life. Like the Yeti can talk. I mean, we don't even know.
Well, they're going to be for a cup of tea or something?
Right. Now, obviously, if he's not a civilized creature and he hasn't sat down and been taught any kind of language, then he's not going to be able to talk to you about life, man. I guess the guy is a big lumbering giant, but it's obvious. A few missing brain cells if he thinks he can talk to a creature. That nobody even knows exists, number one. There's been supposed sightings, but it's just kind of funny. He thinks he's going to talk.
Goodness. Maybe he's a fan of Harry and the Hendersons.
Anyway, he says, I've been thinking about that regarding a return to boxing, but I don't want to make any announcements yet. So there you have it. And speaking of heavyweights, we had a heavyweight match this last weekend that I did not watch, but I heard that Adamek was knocked out in the 10th round in a fight with Klitschko.
Now, let me remind you of something here. Do you remember our show from last week?
Yes, I do.
Do you remember who co-hosted your show with you last week?
That was... Hello.
Oh, there you are. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I got okay, well, last week, the co-host of your show was none other than yours truly, the Boxing Rain Man. And I said on the show, and you can pull up the archive out there, fans, if you want to pull up the archive, you can. But here's what I said on the show, that Klitschko would increasingly start to pummel Adamek as the fight went on. Check. He would wear him down and lump his face up. Check. He would probably knock him down once or twice. Check. And the fight would get stopped in the 10th round. Check.
Well, read your Floyd Mayweather versus... Victor Ortiz preview, because I'm going to be posting that up. I thought I was going to get to it before the show, but we'll get it up before the end of the night so people can have time to digest it before the fight actually takes place. But for those people who can't read but do listen to the show, maybe you could sum it up for us here in the next few minutes.
Sure. Here's what I see happening this weekend. Ortiz... he's a physical guy. He's a strong guy. He's got quick hands, but a lot of times he lets himself get wide open, and that could potentially be a problem. Now Mayweather, on the other hand, he likes to do like the tuck behind the shoulder and everything, which obviously is more effective against a right-handed fighter because the power punch comes from the side you would be rolling. Sometimes you will have a little bit of trouble with a left-hander trying to do that. I see Ortiz trying to almost emulate the game plan Ricky Hatton used back in 2007, because Hatton made things uncomfortable for Mayweather for a few rounds. I'm not saying he won any of those rounds, but you could tell Mayweather was not comfortable in there because Hatton was smothering him and Hatton was putting a lot of pressure on him. He was trying to maul him. I can see Ortiz trying to do that, you know, try to use his strength, pin Mayweather to the ropes, hit him anywhere on the torso. And I think maybe in the second or third round, a combination of Ortiz will get through a straight left hand right hook, and I think it's going to stun Mayweather a little bit. And then Ortiz is going to get very aggressive there. He's going to get very excited almost, and he's really going to start swinging bombs. And I think that will allow Floyd the opportunity to land a counter right hand. Watched a lot of films on Ortiz on YouTube leading up to this fight. Some of his better fights, and then the fight with Berto, the fight with Maidan, even some of the fights where he blew guys out. You know, he's wide open for counter right hands, and he leaves his chin up, and he's easy to hit, and he can be knocked on his ass. And I see, Floyd putting him on the canvas. And then once that happens, I can see Floyd taking over. Landing straight right hands at will almost. Over the rounds, just increasingly wearing, Ortiz down, breaking his face up, causing some swelling around his eyes, maybe a cut over the one eye, to the point where he's going to be a weary and battered warrior come around maybe the seventh or eighth round. And I think early in the ninth round, it'll be stopped. Mayweather will win by stoppage.
Well, we had a press conference out here in Vegas yesterday. I did not go to it. I tried to watch it on Ustream, but the Ustream feed was all screwy. I do have, though, a few points from the press conference. If the page will load here, just waiting. Some quotes. But also, if you check out the blog, there's a whole article on the press conference quotes. And there's a link to the exclusive fight footage from the training, the actual open workout media day that Floyd had out here in Vegas. If you want to see what kind of shape he's in, you can click on that link, check that out. And also, I was on the 24/7 episode this past week where they showed the open workout. You can see me actually taking a picture right up on the ring apron. And then while they're in the ring, you can see me standing next to Leonard Ellerbe on the cage. Although I was only able to find a couple pictures from the press coverage that was online with me actually in the photos. It kind of bummed me out. But then when I saw 24/7, I was like, there I am. So that was kind of cool. But anyway, I think it's going to be a good fight. I guess this page isn't loading for me, so we'll just skip that. It's definitely a good card. We also have a pretty interesting fight for Eric Morales there. And he actually had his opponent switched at the last minute there, sort of like the Nick Diaz situation. I don't have the details right in front of me. But all around, this is going to be a pretty good fight. Fight card, period. Man, why is my computer being so slow? Well, we have a couple other interesting bits of news we could discuss while we're waiting. The new MMA film Warrior opened up last week. They got 5.6 million in box office proceeds. The film, I think, cost something like $25 million to make. So it has a ways to go, but I've really been kind of blown away by the feedback this movie is getting so early. I mean, before it even hit theaters, people were comparing it to Rocky and saying, even in the commercials they were posting, that it was better than The Fighter. And I really don't see that. I mean, I went and saw it myself. It was a screener. I missed the first couple minutes, but I don't think the magic was there, and I didn't see it. The whole package that I saw, it was a good movie, don't get me wrong, but it's not like, the be-all, end-all of fight movies that people are describing it as all of a sudden. And it's getting so much press, between the boxing and wrestling links that I get every day. There's all kinds of talk about this movie because obviously wrestler Kurt Angle was in it. He plays the Russian character Koba. So people were asking him about it. He was in the news because of the DUI situation, so they were already talking about him, and they ended up interviewing him a bunch of times on all these websites about this movie and whether he has any interest in the UFC. So that was kind of part of it. Then there was just all kinds of critics saying that this was such a great film. There was one guy that even compared it to Shakespeare. I think it was like Ebert, whatever his name is there, Roger Ebert, said,
right.
Just compared it to Shakespeare. And I was just like, you gotta be kidding me, you know? I thought it was a good movie, like a movie you go and see once, and you're like, yeah, that was pretty good, you know, can't complain. But it's not like, oh, that's my top 10 all-time favorite fight movie. I wouldn't even say that, you know? It's like, this blows my mind that it's gotten this much good press. For pretty much it's the only thing good, great thing that you could say about it was that it's definitely the best mixed martial arts movie in the modern era of mixed martial arts. And that's not saying much because, I mean, that's comparing it to movies like Never Back Down, which sucked, absolutely sucked. And I actually went to a local show in New England that was promoting that all the time, and I couldn't believe it. Like, this is really nothing like MMA involved in that movie. So anyway, it is what it is. It made a lot of money over the weekend, and more power to it. But it's the one thing that I saw in the movie that I didn't like that made me think this is not even real. I mean, the fact that there's 9 or 10 cuts on a guy's face, and not a single one of them is bleeding. In every scene of that movie, they must have anticipated that they were going to have a lot of families coming to see this, and it was going to be a movie that parents were going to let their kids watch, because they purposely seem to have edited out all blood. And obviously, when a guy gets cut up in a fight, even if his corner man does a good job during the fight, he's going to be bleeding at some point. You know, there's going to be at least a drop of blood coming out of that cut. And this movie had no blood. No blood on the mat, no blood on anybody's face, nothing. So that really kind of bothered me. And then the other thing that bothered me was they compared local MMA. They called it UFC fighting when one of the characters was involved in local MMA. And obviously we know from... being in the business that it's mixed martial arts, that's the sport, and it's UFC, that's a league inside the sport. And for them to, you know, try to be the best MMA movie out there and to perpetuate that stereotype, I think sends the wrong message. But I guess they're trying to appeal to popular opinion or something. I don't know. But anyway, quotes. We were going to talk about quotes for the Mayweather fight at the press conference the other day. Mayweather says, I'm going to go in there with class, and we'll leave there with class. Victor Ortiz said the fight won't go the distance, so I say, okay, it won't go the distance. I don't have to brag. I don't have to boast. I'm going to go in there and execute the game plan. And he said to Oscar De La Hoya, you've done a hell of a job with Victor Ortiz's career. I fought them all, never backed down, stayed focused, and was always at my best. I want to thank the press and the media for keeping me relevant. And we talked a little bit about that last week. Floyd really does owe a lot to the media for keeping him out there in the public eye. And maybe he owes a little bit to himself for being that bad boy type and going out there and getting in the press when he's not boxing. I don't know if that's a good quality. Going out there and having his people shoot at guys at skating rinks and slapping the kids, no, slapping the wife around, the ex-wife, ex-girlfriend, whatever she is, and talking about power pellets. It's might be controversial, but it's not something to emulate, self-fight. And I don't know, there's a lot of people out there, fans and experts, saying Victor Ortiz is going to win this fight.
A lot of people think that, and I think it stems from the fact that some people think that it's going to be an old Floyd Mayweather. He's going to lose a step or two, and he's against a stronger, bigger, and possibly more hungry kid out there.
And, of course, you know, Mayweather keeps sticking to the line. You know, 41 other people said they were going to beat me, and 41 failed. But Ortiz says at the press conference yesterday, 41 of those fighters were not me. 41 of those couldn't move like me. And he says, I am going to teach you what it's like to have a loss on your record. And says he's going to put him on his ass. And we'll see. We'll see. I think, you know, without seeing Floyd actually spar, I really can't say much about, you know, from his open workout, whether he's really ready for Ortiz's style. Obviously, this is a southpaw. He supposedly purposely picked a southpaw because he's supposedly preparing for Pacquiao, but that remains to be seen whether that fight will be made after this one. First of all, both guys have to win. And Floyd is a very defensive fighter, and I don't know whether Ortiz has really faced anybody that defensive-minded. But he also has a little bit of power, and he displayed a little bit more aggressiveness in his last fight. Even though he's had a lot of time off, if that trend keeps up, I think Ortiz is going to be very surprised. And Floyd didn't pick him for no reason. I mean, obviously, the guy's had a stumble or two along the way. He's not perfection in the ring. He's more power and brute strength than finesse and style. So I think Floyd realizes that and hopes for the guy to bull after him, and he'll just be the defensive guy he always is, sit back, wait for his moments, jab for the win, and circle the ring. And, you know, if there's an opening for a knockout, he'll take it, but it probably won't be till late in the fight as far as, you know, my perspective goes. I don't know. But we will definitely see. We'll figure. We'll definitely be tuning in for that fight and reporting on it after the fact a little bit. And also, we have. We'll talk about it maybe a little bit later, before because we got to get our next guest on the line.
Oh, before we get him on the line, forgot to mention this. It's tonight down in Mexico, it looks like. Good friend of mine, Rogers Matagua, is going for the title against Johnny Gonzalez. He's a 12-1 underdog. But, you know, I mean, as my friend Philly Keith just said, it's like, you know, is this, you know, the last great fight he might have in him, or is it maybe time, you know, he retires? I mean, we'll see. I'm going to see if I can catch this fight online.
Yeah. Actually, and results last night for that whole card. So we were in the loop on that one. I don't remember getting much of a description on there, though. The microphone. Can you hear me, Tony?
I can hear you. I can hear you fine.
My computer is telling me no microphone detected.
Yeah.
What's up with that? Anyway. We're going to be on the line here with Matt Kaplowitz and Colleen, the producer of a film about the MMA community in 9/11, which we just had a 10th anniversary of this last week. And obviously we remember the victims, and we had an excellent opening day Sunday football to kind of commemorate all that. And it was pretty intense, all the different displays that they had, with the full field flags. It was nice to see. Of course, the New York Jets really put the exclamation point on the day there with the comeback win against the Cowboys. I mean, what's more American and 9/11 tribute than, you know, the Cowboys, the big Texas team facing New York's most loved team, I guess you could say. Even though the Jets are in our division and I want to see them lose, that was a good game to see them win. That's a little bit of a tribute there. And the Patriots, of course, they won. on Monday night in nice fashion. I thought it was sort of interesting to see that we didn't really need Ocho Cinco, and Brady still put up 517 yards. This is unbelievable. I had never seen that. And then Ocho Cinco got a lot of analysts pissed off, a lot of ex-NFL analysts pissed off because he tweeted that he basically enjoyed watching the show.
Yeah.
And Teddy Bruschi was the worst. He had mentioned something like, you know, you're supposed to be a part of that. You know, you're not supposed to be in awe of it. You shouldn't be out there talking about, you know, how great it is from an outsider's perspective. You're supposed to be learning the system and get involved. But anyway, it is what it is. We're just getting the numbers in here. My computer is being a slowpoke tonight. So it's going to take a minute here. But we do have UFC Fight Night 25 coming up on the weekend. So we could talk a little bit about that while we're getting this done. La-di-da. All right. I have Jake Shields versus Jake Ellenberger. That's the main event fight there. It's going to be pretty interesting because both guys have a great background in wrestling. Ellenberger had a really interesting fight months ago. Not sure if it was last year or early this year. But he fought in a fight I specifically remember watching because the guy I was watching was said that he thought Shirk lost the fight. I was pretty convinced that Shirk won because he had more takedowns, number one, and because I was a little bit more familiar with the MMA scoring than my friend. But Ellenberger ended up getting the loss. Now he faces, I got the rhyming with Jake on the line there, I guess. He faces Jake Shields, pretty much unbelievable fighter himself. Has a lot of great background. Ellenberger's lost two fights, his last two fights. So if he loses this one, the history of the UFC says he's out. But as we know from the Dan Hardy situation, you can lose four in a row in the right environment and still keep your job. I'm convinced that was because he's sponsored by Zions. The UFC owning Fertitta's also owns Zions. But anyway, he is definitely on the cusp there, whether it's this fight or the next fight. If he loses, this time, it's borderline. But next time, it's probably definite if he loses his next fight. But he might win. We'll see. It's definitely one of those matchups that I like Jake Shields in, for sure. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that Ellenberger could pull off a win, especially knowing that he's on borrowed time a little bit. And also, give me a second here. We have some other good fights. We have Alan Belcher versus Jason McDonald. Eric Koch versus Jonathan Brookins. Brookins from The Ultimate Fighter. He won a few seasons ago. It's definitely a tough guy. A very weird guy. Doesn't carry around a cell phone, rides his bike everywhere. He's down to earth, big time thinker. He spends a lot of time at the library. And apparently during the time that he was off from his injury, he rode his bike all the way through New York City in Brooklyn. And he went to a bunch of different training camps all around the country to see how they do things. And he also learned how to do some rock climbing. So he's been out there in the press talking about how great of a rock climber he has become. But anyway, also on that card, we have Donghi Yang versus Court McGee, Evan Dunham versus Shamar Bailey, T. TJ, that's another couple of wrestlers, by the way, guys with backgrounds in wrestling. Bailey was on the Ultimate Fighter as well. Didn't do as well as expected of him, but he did all right. TJ Waldberger versus Mike Stumpf. Ken Stone versus Donnie Walker. Cody McKenzie versus Wagner Rocha. Matt Riddle versus Lance Benoist. Jorge Lopez versus Justin Edwards. Seth Baczynski versus Clay Harvison. And finally, Robert Peralta versus Mike Lolo rounds out that card. Now let's connect a couple folks here. I'll start with the fight nerd, Matt Kaplowitz. And the producer of the film, Colleen.
Hello?
Hey, Matt, this is Rabble Rousing
yep.
Rich from Fight News Unlimited.
Hey, Rich, how are you?
Good, we also have...
Hey, Rich, yes, he told me that because I'm getting like a really bad echo right now.
All right, we're also trying to get Colleen.
Hello?
Hello, Colleen.
Hello?
Hi, we got Matt and Colleen on, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Matt, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about this New York MMA community and the film?
Well, the film we put out, Colleen and myself, is A Fighting Spirit. And it basically is a little video tribute that me and Colleen did about New York mixed martial arts coaches and fighters and their connection to the event that happened here in New York on 9/11. You know, this was something that kind of came together on a little bit of a whim about 3 weeks ago. And, you know, Colleen and I both just came together, joined forces, and put together this little video tribute about how various guys like Enzo Gracie, Pete Sell, Vitor Shelin Rivero, and even guys like Tim Kennedy and Jorge Rivera, who are not New Yorkers, but were also affected by the events of 9/11, and just kind of put together a little memoir of how it affected their lives and how it changed them.
All right. And what was some of the interesting stories that you discovered about 9/11 and the connection to MMA people during the filming?
Well, you know, I think probably one of the most interesting stories, probably the beginning of the video, I would say, is when we have Steve Kepler, who runs here at Combat Sambo here in Midtown Manhattan. And he was telling us about how when he first, witnessed the events, he was actually riding on the tram from Roosevelt Island over to Manhattan. And he actually had not been back on that tram since that event happened, since that day. So basically almost 10 years to date, is when he finally got back onto that tram and then rode it again. So that was kind of interesting. And we have some stories like Pete Sell as well. And Colleen, if you want to jump in and give any stories too, Pete, go ahead.
Yeah, we definitely had one with Pete Sell was telling a story about a neighbor of his who was actually a police officer. And he was helping shuttle a lot of people out of one of the buildings at the time. And he was doing it for a while. He finally just took a break, and he ran downstairs to go and get a pack of cigarettes. And as soon as he ran downstairs, the building collapsed right behind him.
Wow.
So, yeah, we have some pretty strong stories in there. That was definitely one of them. So,
And that's really the hardest part, too, when we were doing this, we had so many good stories and we had so many great stories. And the hard part when it came down to it was just deciding whose stories are better than others, even though they're all great. And that was one of the big things we had to do, just kind of, especially for the sake of getting it down to a nice, manageable time, too, is just, weeding through who was better than the others. And they're all such good stories. It's so hard to cut this thing down to the time we got it down to.
Right.
Yeah, definitely get as many personalities in there as much as possible. Definitely keep everybody interested, but, I mean, all the stories would just keep you glued to your seat for sure.
Mm-hmm. And, Colleen, can you tell us a little bit about your background in film?
Well, I originally started as an illustrator in comic books independently, and then went on to game design. So it's mostly all art background. Also related to mixed martial arts, I've been doing martial arts for as long as I've been drawing. So I stumbled onto filmmaking just from doing, just from editing. I was doing some editing from a lot of the highlight videos, like the Vandalay God of War one, my first one, like the Damian Maia ones, a lot of editing. And then eventually I just wanted to start shooting my own footage. And, I mean, it just blew up from there because I essentially used the same rules with filmmaking, visual storytelling as I do when I was doing illustration, when I was doing my comic panel work. So it's essentially the same rules, but, you know, certain things are different. You know, you learn a different language, but essentially it's the same thing. So it's just one thing just keeps leading to another, and I just go from project to project and just keep learning.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And, Matt, I know they call you the fight nerd. Number one, how did you get that nickname, and can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, fight nerd, if you want to figure out how I got the name, all you got to do is look at me and hear my voice, and that's probably more than enough of an indication. It's kind of a given name, really. It just kind of happened one day. I was in one of my office jobs that I had, and it just kind of came out just one day. It was random as that. It was just a joke in passing, and then I just decided to stick with it when I started the website. And, you know, my background is actually all like Queens. You know, I'm actually also from an illustration background, and that's also, you know, I think why we work together so well, too, especially with this documentary. I came from an illustration background, and I've done various things since then, and, you know, the site officially started early 2009, basically because I've been freelancing for various other outlets, photography and graphic design and whatnot, and I'm still getting a little bit of echo here. And so then that eventually evolved into making my website, and here we are today, you know, 3.5 years later, like I said, rolling out all sorts of exclusive videos and stuff, and working on new exciting projects like what we just did with Colleen.
Cool. And what inspired you guys to actually get down and put this together?
Well, initially, he came to me first with the idea. And I was still doing the promotions for New York MMA, the feature. And he was just saying, you know, he wanted to do something for the 10th anniversary. And it was a huge deal about it all over the media, and a lot of people were talking about it. So the idea just came to him, and he was saying we should do something based on the experiences from the martial artists throughout the city. Some of the more famous martial art gyms and the not-so-famous martial art gyms wanted to have a lot of different experiences. And, I mean, it just clicked with me because even though I'm already heavily interested in MMA, you know, I also wanted to expand how we started to do the storytelling so it doesn't just have, you know, mixed martial arts in there. It just shows the human condition, the human element of everything related to this. So, yeah, it's essentially how I got started. It was the brainchild right from Matt.
All right.
And I was lucky, you know, Colleen was basically, you know, the first guy I talked to. I knew he was going to be the perfect guy to do this. And it didn't take much time at all to convince him to do this thing at all. And, you know, it's a risky venture because we're basically taking something that can be misconstrued as this being maybe a political agenda, you know, pushing on MMA fighters. And that's definitely not the purpose of this film. If your viewers have seen it, they know there's zero political agenda. It's purely the stories and perspectives of the fighters. And they've got all sorts of points of view. And, yeah, the video wasn't really just for MMA fans, though. It's also for the mainstream New Yorkers. People don't really even know what MMA is, and, you know, who don't even know maybe the difference between UFC and MMA. They don't know what the difference between those two acronyms are. And the goal was to, you know, as Colleen said, to humanize these fighters. Because, you know, we've got guys like Kenzo and Drago, and also some very well-spoken, eloquent fighters discussing their experiences and what they remember from that date. And I think for New Yorkers, especially who don't know what the sport is, or for the ones that think know what it is, and think it's just this barbaric cockfighting thing, you know, it's not that at all. These are smart people. These are people, too. That's what we wanted to show, is that they're humans, the guys, what you think they are from the misperceptions that you see on TV.
Yeah, fighters in general seem to get that bad rap as being dumb because they take a lot of blows to the head. But, you know, I know too many guys that fight who actually live up to the stereotype. Most of the guys that I've interviewed and talked to who are also fighters seem to be very well spoken for themselves. You know, there's a few exceptions along.
I'm sorry. This number is not valid. Please enter your password.
Who's on the phone?
Then
who
press pound.
Sorry about that.
It's Colleen.
We got Colleen. Matt, do we have you, or is that the answer machine we hear? That's the answer machine.
Yeah.
Tony.
I'm here.
Tony's there. We got the radio show. We got Colleen. Just got to get Matt. Okay. For some reason, I guess my Skype system failed. I don't know what happened there. A little technical difficulty.
Hello?
Matt?
Yep.
All right, we're back.
All right, there he is.
So, where were we? That was quite the delay there. We had a little crash on the Skype system. But tell us a little bit about your own personal perspectives on 9/11. Number one, the actual event and the anniversary events that took place in the city.
Oh, myself personally, I was in high school at the time. I think I was a junior or senior. I remember it was early in the morning when it was beginning. And, I just remember seeing people running around in the hallway for no reason, just being really annoyed there during one of my classes. And in between periods, I walk out and I see from the third floor of my building, I can just see smoke rising from the direction of Manhattan. I've got no idea what's happening. It's like a big fire or something. And as the morning progressed, we started to get little bits of information trickling in over the PA system. The principal telling us an airplane crashed into the towers, and I've got the word that it was a second plane crashed into the towers, and still no one really knew what was happening. We just knew something big was going on there. And as the day continued to go on, kids were being called out of school. It was just pure chaos. There was just, no one really knew what was happening, just panic and chaos. And I just remember right after school running home so I could see what was going on. And, we really didn't have many TV channels at the time, too, because everything was all screwed up. And I just remember turning on the TV trying to find the first channel that worked. And once I found it, all I saw was this giant pile of rubble in the middle of Manhattan. I just couldn't believe what was going on. So that's pretty much what I remember from that day very well, was just all the chaos and not knowing what was happening. Even after I knew what was happening, I was still just confused.
Right.
I'll tell you two of my personal recollections. I'm going to give you three. One for the day it happened. I was, I was at my job. I had just walked in. I was actually a few minutes late, and I walked in. I was downstairs bothering one of my coworkers when somebody else came in, and then we were all just, obviously everybody's in a state of shock, and everybody's trying to get TVs on and everything, and we didn't know what to do. And I remember going outside, and I live outside of Philadelphia. And I remember just looking up in the air saying, like, if stuff's coming, it's coming from above, and I don't know where it's coming from. So that was one thing I'll remember. The other two were sports-related. I'm more of a boxing guy than anything. I've been involved in boxing for just coming up on 17 years now. Fighter, coach, obviously a writer about it, radio host. And 10 days after it happened, the first ESPN card was set to air from Philadelphia, and three of my friends were fighting on the card. So these are guys I trained with, and so I was there, and I had set my VCR up to record the show. And I'm glad I did, because beforehand, they had a singer out of Philadelphia by the name of Bunny Sigler sing God Bless America. And it was unbelievable. And every fighter that night, we had guys that came in from Mexico. A friend of mine who's actually fighting tonight for a world title from Africa was on the card. Every fighter came to the ring either wearing the Stars and Stripes or carrying a flag with them. And, if you guys go on YouTube and you look under the username TornadoTP, I actually put on YouTube the rendition of God Bless America because it was that amazing. And then the other one I remember was about a week later, the fight that was supposed to happen on September 15th between Bernard Hopkins and Felix Trinidad at Madison Square Garden, got rescheduled to the 29th. And they had, did a big tribute, and a lot of the firefighters and police officers were there in attendance. And that was, just unbelievable. And just seeing the pictures in the air, especially Bernard Hopkins coming to the ring, coming out to America the Beautiful by Ray Charles, and he had the American flag bandana around his neck. Inspiring. Inspiring more than anything.
Yeah, I remember on my end, it was I was actually getting ready to head out to work around the time I worked at Rockstar Games downtown. And the 2 train, the subway I was supposed to take, ended up getting delayed. And I remember I was just going to have to call and tell them, okay, the train's delayed. I didn't know what was going on. And then I just started, like, hearing screams from upstairs. And I ran upstairs, and my friend's parents, they were just sitting there looking at the TV, and we just saw this one of the buildings was just in smoke. And it's like, oh, when the plane just hit the building. And our initial reaction, we didn't know what the hell to think of it. We were like, okay, somebody was drunk or sleeping on the job at first. We didn't know what the problem was. And then, you know, the broadcast just kept going. You kept hearing them talk, and then we just saw the second plane hit, and we didn't even know what to say at the time. It was just, it was like shocking. It was, it made you freeze. It was horrifying at the same time. And then what made it even crazier is just, then we just saw them both collapse just right there. And we were just scattering about, calling friends and family that we knew, seeing if everybody was working that day down there. And then just going insane, trying to figure out what the hell was going on, were people all right. And I remember we couldn't even get back to the building, to our job, in like, what, a week or 2 weeks, I think it was, because that entire area was just smoked out. And the Rockstar, it was on Prince Street in East Village in Broadway. And they just evacuated that entire area for at least a month. And some people came back to work. Some people just decided to stay home. It was nerve-wracking, man. It was, you didn't know what to think about any of it. You were afraid to get on the bus. You know, you didn't know what the hell was going to happen if the subway lights went out for a second like they usually did. Instead of being like, oh, okay, it's just the light going out, you started to freak out and panic. And you didn't trust people. You didn't know what to think. It was the height of paranoia in this country, and it was insane.
Yeah, I actually, back in 2001, worked for a local newspaper in New England. And it was an afternoon newspaper, so of course the presses were stopped so that they could update the front page. And I got to work after somebody, I think it was my girlfriend, called me and told me what had happened. And, you know, then I finally got to work, and I actually had to deliver the papers for the routes that didn't have carriers. So I was in the circulation department, they call it. And basically, I was training a new kid that week. And I sat in my car for a while before I even went up to the office because I wanted to listen to coverage. And I actually listened to, I think it was Tom Brokaw, that they were broadcasting from the TV onto the radio. And so I'm sitting in my car listening to him describe how the first tower collapsed, and then I got up into the office, and everybody's talking about it, of course, in the office, and then all these cars start pouring out of the business complex where the paper's offices are, and this kid that I'm training turns to me, and he says, do we get to go home, too? I looked at him, and I said, are you an idiot? I mean, really, this is the news business. We are the last people who are going home today. And it's in the Boston area where the paper was, just like 20 minutes outside of Boston. So all the planes coming into Logan were flying very low. And you know, they were trying to ground all the planes in the area at the time. So that was kind of eerie. And then to get a hold of the newspaper and see it actually in print coming right hot off the press was probably the most interesting aspect of the day itself. But I was just so inspired by, you know, the recovery effort and all that I actually decided to take all the money that I'd saved from working at the paper to take a trip to New York, my first ever trip to New York City, where I actually stayed. I had been through it driving, but never actually stayed there until then. So I went down there and I decided to spend all the money that I saved on a trip there with my girlfriend right after Thanksgiving that year, 2001. And I was really struck by the actual damage all around, like you talked about. You know, there was other businesses affected even. And you could see there was chunks out of the corners of buildings that were surrounding the two towers. And one thing that really stuck out was there was dust on all the windows, and people had actually written in the dust. And it was still there in November. And also, there's teddy bears everywhere on every wall surrounding the complex. People left teddy bears and notes and messages and missing pictures and descriptions of people who were missing. And it's just, you know, hard to not be overwhelmed by all that. The other aspect of the whole thing is, you know, there was a lot of talk about the ripple effects of that day. And not only do you lose actual human beings out of the whole picture of, you know, the world itself, but you also have people that whose lives were changed by that day because they decided, well, you know, maybe I'm going to go in a different direction. And I actually was out here on Saturday. They had a big horse event out here in Las Vegas, a company called Horses for Heroes that was set up specifically in response to 9/11 to help first responders and have their whole families involved in being able to learn how to ride horses. And then I also got involved in something called Battle of the Badges, where the New York Fire Department boxing team came up to Boston to have a fight with a whole fight card with New England law enforcement. And I've been part of two of those events so far. So I actually got to give a tribute to four firemen who were lost on September 11th, who had actually had some history with the team. And some of those stories really shook me. One in particular, the nephew of the coach was a fireman who was a probationary fireman, and that was his first fire. It was September 11th, and he was lost on that day. So, you know, a lot of touching stories like that really bring home, make it intensely personal. But as far as you know, the 10-year anniversary goes and everything like that, I think we've seen that as much as there's obviously a negative impact from all those lives lost, there's also a lot of positive things that have come because of it. And people have kind of banded together. There's more of a sense of American spirit that's come out since then. And I think it's amazing what you guys have put together in tribute. And, you know, as far as people thinking it's political or whatever, you know, taking advantage of it, I doubt that's on too many people's minds. I think everybody wants to come out and talk about, you know, what impact that day had on their lives. So,
yeah, that's one of the things that I noticed when we had a lot of different websites reposting the video. You know, one of the things I wanted to accomplish as well was to get MMA fans talking about things outside of MMA for once. And, you know, I see different websites posting the video up, and then there'd be people in the comments section writing about what they remembered happening on that day, even if they weren't from New York. Everybody's got a different story from what happened that day. And it was nice to see all these MMA fans just kind of getting to know each other on a more personal level and not just, I don't know, just talking about sports and writing random snarky comments about how fighters they don't like or whatever. But here they're actually discussing something serious once, and it was interesting to see how the fans reacted and how the casters, how they reacted. It's what I wanted. We got them talking.
And how do people find the movie out there? Can they still watch it or purchase it?
Well, it should be.
You can watch it for free.
Recently on fightnerd.com.
TheFightNerd.com?
Yeah, TheFightNerd.com.
Okay. So you can watch it for free on there?
Absolutely, 100%.
And tell us a little bit about what you guys are in New York now, right?
Yep.
What was it like dealing with the 10-year anniversary festivities there? Did you guys attend any of those events or see a lot of things worth talking about as far as that goes?
I'd actually gone to a memorial we had here in Queens, New York. I'm from Queens, and not too far from my house, there was actually a memorial event being held. And they were actually putting in such a memorial, basically a plaque, and it had two girders from the Trade Center that they brought in. They placed them in the ground, and they had American flags there, and, you know, it's basically a permanent name we have now in my neighborhood. So, you know, we had about 100 people there, various news outlets were there covering it, and, you know, again, we had various politicians were there, we had rabbis, we had priests, and just everybody, you know, just getting together and remembering these people. And, you know, it was just nice seeing, like, all these different people in one spot with all their different stories. And for, you know, one night, we're all just one people.
Right. And have you had a chance to actually look at the site now that they're building in memory of the event on this on the actual site of the actual attacks?
Yeah, I saw the memorial that they have, and of course down there doing the shoot, I saw the construction that they were having for the new structure itself. But the memorial, I wanted to get a chance to go down there and visit it myself. I mean, it looks beautiful. You know, I mean, there's of course the little controversy about misspellings and names here and there, but so far it looks gorgeous. I just want to get a chance to finally go down there.
Right.
A few years ago, I actually used to work. This is before the Pioneer started. This is one of my full time jobs. Before this, I was working for a company, and I was actually about four blocks away from the Trade Center site. So this job I had, I guess it was 2007, and I basically would pass it by every day for a year and a half, and just watch this hole in the ground become something more and more. And here we are now, 10 years later, and it's become something new, and it's obviously very symbolic of how New York has grown as well. And I'm just happy to see. I'm looking forward to checking it out now that the memorial is totally done, and seeing it for myself, and seeing it enough. It's no longer just a hole in the ground. It's now something a lot more meaningful.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting too to hear about. It's kind of unfortunate as well to hear about these firemen who are actually working on the scene, and actually the coach of the FDNY boxing team is one of these people that has the lung issues from working on the scene while the whole fire was still smoldering underground. And the insurance for the fire department and none of the memorial money is actually going to those families. So I think that's one of the last remaining things that ought to be done to inspire more people to help those guys out. So if you guys have a sequel in mind, maybe think about trying to start a fund in memory of those guys. Any final thoughts on the whole project and what people can take away from it?
Personally, I just actually want to thank my team for all helping us. Kalim Fulihada, we were speaking with today. He's on the phone now with us. Sorry, I'm going to tell him right now, Kalim did a kick-ass job in this movie. I'm really happy we get to work together on this thing. And I also want to thank Paul Romero, who is our producer on the movie as well, and Nick Palmisiano from Ranger Up. Without Paul and Nick, this movie would not have gotten where it is. And thanks for all the support we got from everyone in New York and outside New York, and Rich, your listeners as well. We're just very appreciative of the support we've gotten and the reception that we've gotten for this short film.
Awesome.
Yeah, I definitely want to thank Paul Romero as well. Definitely saw that there were a lot of hiccups in the scene, and she really helped tremendously with. Definitely thanks Steve Kepfer, especially for sharing the stories about his family with the firefighter lineage. Pretty much thank everybody. Especially thank Matt for bringing this to me in the first place. We couldn't have gotten any of this done with pretty much everybody that was involved in the team. I just really want people to go away with getting a chance to connect with everybody that they see on the screen. Try not to think too much of them as, that's Hendo Gracie, but, this is this person who experienced this, as a deep human being. It's not just the names. It's the experience that they're bringing to the table. And that's something I just really want people to take away from when they finally get a chance to see the film. So, all in all, especially thank you. Thank you for even having us on here. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Well, you're welcome. It's definitely something that's close to my heart. Having a little bit of experience, in the media at the time when it happened, and also being a mixed martial arts fan and writer. And just being a fan of the recovery effort in general for 9/11 and everything that's around that, the first responders. My father was a cop for all his life, pretty much 30 years, most of his career. So I can definitely understand it from that perspective, too, as a civil servant, or the son of a civil servant, I should say. It's one of those things where, you can't help but be moved by it. So, whatever opportunity you can get to talk about it from a different angle is incredible, and it's worth talking about. So I'm glad you guys got a lot of press in the fight community for what you did, and I hope a lot more people go out and check it out. We're going to be putting word out about this show, and hopefully a lot of people will hear what the effort's all about and go check out the film. And we'll post
it on the website. We love having the fight fans check out all the fight fans that are watching it. Make sure you show it to your friends who might not know what MMA is. You know, we want to let them know, you know, New York and outside New York, people don't know what mixed martial arts is. This is a way to educate them and show them that these fighters are people, they're humans, they're smart, but not these, you know, like I said before, barbarians that they might think they are. So let's use this as a way to also educate people who don't know what the sport is and show them who we really are.
All right. And maybe next year we'll get MMA passed in New York, right?
Oh, hopefully, man.
Congratulations. That's a big bone to pick. A lot of politics involved there, unfortunately. You know, we'll see. I think it's bound to happen. It's just a matter of time and enough effort put into the game to show people it's not like it used to be with groin strikes and headbutts and all that nasty stuff. The game has changed and evolved. It's like you said, it's full of a lot of intelligent people that people might be surprised about.
That's even crazier that you'd be surprised in how many people actually don't know that the sport isn't legalized here. Most people just naturally assume that it is because they see, you know, the UFC on, you know, every other weekend. So they figure, oh, you know, it'll be legalized here. And, you know, they have the bar showing it and have all these views showing the pay-per-views. But then when we had we had interviews with people and talked to people even during our rally, most people didn't even know it wasn't legal. That was funny, actually.
Yeah.
Probably not in a good way, but it was funny.
Well, for years when I covered MMA in Massachusetts, they had shows that weren't regulated, you know, and they had never had a UFC show until the one that they had in Boston the year after they regulated it finally. But regulation never stopped Massachusetts, but for some reason, you know, it's not the same way in New York. I kind of find it hard to relate because of that, because, you know, it's like, yeah, the UFC hasn't come here, but there's still an MMA show every weekend. I just don't get it when it's going on in Massachusetts. But every state is so different. It's just one of those things. But we'll see it eventually. But anyway, I appreciate you guys coming on, talking about the film. And once again, if you go to thefightnerd.com, you guys out there listening can check it out. And we'll definitely keep in touch and keep the word out there about this this film and whatever else you guys want to promote. Just shoot me a line and I'll get it on the blog.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much, Rich.
Have a good night, guys.
All right. Have a good night.
All right, Tony. It's time to earn your money.
I'm earning my money. What do you want me to talk about?
We have Vicente Escobedo, the boxer, coming on. Next,
okay.
Like right now. So we're going to...
Rich, let me ask you a question before we get him on. Are you worried about your Red Sox?
Am I worried? No.
Okay.
This is the time of year where they traditionally go into cruise control. You know, I...
Yeah, but they haven't locked anything up yet.
Right.
I mean, they're only four ahead of the wild card, and the team they're ahead of is spanking them tonight.
Yeah. Well, the Devil Rays, they have a lot to fight for, you know. Obviously, if they get the wild card spot, they'll be in the playoffs. And they haven't really had much of an eventful year. And it just seems like they're coming on late because they know that the heat is on. But the Red Sox, you know, they're that team that's always known for their comebacks, number one. And number two, their depth is tremendous. You know, they never really had much of a losing streak this year. They've always bounced back. And, you know, they're going to end up facing the Yankees, of course, and this is one of the best years they've ever had against the Yankees. So as long as they win, as long as the wild card doesn't become as close as like a half a game and they're sweating bullets, I think they'll be all right. But, you know, we got about half a month here left of baseball. And four games is a lot to pick up, you know, on a team. And I don't think they're going to be able to do it.
Well, don't say that because say the Rays win tonight, then they got a
couple more games against them in the series. If I'm not mistaken.
Well, Tim Wakefield got his 200th win the other night. And I'd rather be happy about that than be worried about them not making the playoffs. I don't think there's a real chance this year. Whether they get to the big game, the World Series, is another thing entirely. I don't know whether they're World Series material this year. They have been really good throughout the year. They've had a lot of they've made a lot of progress since day one. And they have a pretty good group. But they've been a little bit iffy here and there. I do worry about their chances of going deep into the playoffs and getting to the World Series. But as far as them getting there, I think it's kind of a given at this point. The sportscasters and the analysts will talk about it and get worried about it for me, I think. But I'm not really concerned. I think they'll do as much as it takes. I kind of look at it like the way Bill Belichick runs the Patriots. So it doesn't maybe any more because they're so talented now. But back in the day, he wouldn't be afraid to beat you by a field goal, the way Belichick would operate the game and run the clock and pick the plays. He would be perfectly happy beating you by a field goal. And a lot of teams were beaten exactly that way during their championship years, by a single field goal. And the playoff games and the Super Bowls at times that the team won were won by a field goal, back in the Adam Vinatieri days.
I remember that.
So I think Terry Francona is going to operate the same way, and they'll win by at least a game going into the playoffs with their wild card. Well, I'd much rather have the league championship position going in, but beggars can't be choosers, I guess. Anyway, let's get Vincent on. Vicente, sorry.
Okay, and while you're doing that, I'm going to send you the link for this flight that's going to be on.
Better not, Vicente.
Hello?
Vicente.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going? This is Rebel.
Good, how are you?
We also have Tony the Tornado on the line. He's our, we call him the Boxing Rain Man.
Yo, what's up? Hey, what's up, man?
Good to finally get in touch with you. I know we missed you the last time because you were training hard for this Rocky Juarez fight.
So yeah.
We understand that. But tell us a little bit about this matchup and what you've been doing to get ready.
Well, this matchup is really, really, like all of them are really important, but I think what makes this one really special is that, you got two Olympians going to go at it. Obviously everyone knows that Rocky won a silver medalist. He won a silver medal in the 2000 Olympics, and I went to the 2004 Olympics to Athens, which has a medal. So, this is a huge thing. And then we know that Rocky fought, some of the top Mexican fighters out there. So we know what he brings to the table. And me coming off an injury in my hand, and I'm going down to 130, back to my normal weight where I feel more comfortable, I think this is a good fight for both of us. And, I just can't wait. I think, come next Friday, going to be a good fight. Like, preparation's been really good. We've been changing it up. I've been doing a lot of hiking, running in the mountains. We've been doing a lot of biking uphill on the loose sand trails. We've been doing swimming. So we've definitely been changing it up as far as just conditioning wise, and I feel really, really strong and can't wait.
All right. And what would you say has been your toughest fight so far?
My toughest fight, I got to say, it had to be against Robert Guerrero. I think that was the toughest fight. started from the beginning of the bell. We had an accidental headbutt, and I had a big cut on the side of my head, which I didn't come to realize how big it actually was until I seen the fight, and I was bleeding a lot. Got me off track, my game plan, but then I kind of got back to where I was at, what kind of plan I had, and then I got dropped by him, but I came back and I finished strong, you know, and I felt good. I just felt that he was just a stronger fighter than I. But I think that happened. He's probably my toughest fight.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robert Guerrero has really come on strong the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And there's no shame in losing to him.
It's
come out of nowhere and just has been phenomenal in his last few fights. And,
Just to
finish the fight with him is something special these days.
I'm kind of thinking whatever it was, 12 rounds, you know, because I started to kind of figure him out and kind of put the pressure, and I finished pretty strong, you know, and but it was too late, but that's the path, and I think I've learned much more and got better from that. So and now we got Rocky Juarez, who's a different fighter who comes at me and works the body a lot and has a lot of experience. But I feel like I'm there right with him, and I'm gonna be right there with him fighting him on next Friday.
All right.
I'm taking a look at your record right now as we speak, and I see first of all about maybe 2.5 years ago. Big win over Kevin Kelly, who I remember watching for a lot of years. He's always a personal favorite of mine. But then there's also the fight on there with Michael Katsidas, who's a very top-notch fighter, very active and pressure fighter. It was a split decision loss, but it looked like it was relatively close on all the cards. Tell me a little bit about what it was like fighting him.
You know, it was difficult. He put pressure a lot, but the thing is, I felt like I didn't hold my ground. I should have held my ground more instead of moving so much. I was moving too much when I should have kind of sat there and hold my ground and fought him a little bit, maybe tied him up, stop the action. Kind of, he was kind of muscling me when I kind of should have did that to him, kind of smothered him and show him that I'm right there and I want to fight him. And maybe as well kind of boxing and throwing different angles. And another thing that I happened to find out after that fight is that I was dealing with all these years I was dealing with athlete's asthma, and I didn't know that. I thought it went away. I thought I had no problem because usually you can have it as a young kid, and then when you grow up, it can basically not have an effect of you anymore. It can basically be gone. But I remember in the 10th round when I seen his jaw, and I dislocated his jaw or did something. I tried. My mind was telling me, okay, I got so much more in the tank. I got to take him out. I can finish him here. But my body wouldn't let me. I felt really drained and tired, and I just couldn't push it those last two rounds. And I think, I'm not going to make excuses, but I think, without the inhaler that I have now, I think it would have been such a big difference. I would be able to close strong like I did against Guerrero. Then I had the inhaler, my asthma wasn't affecting me, and I felt good and strong, and I closed really, really strong this last couple of rounds against Guerrero, but I just couldn't do that against Casillas. But that was also a tough fight. He's a two-time world champion, and he definitely was strong, but obviously he didn't hit as hard. He figured as big as he is, muscular, he didn't really hit that hard. Robert hit much harder.
Yeah, actually, back then, Katsidas was, I think, involved in one of the fights that was Fight of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
I forget who he fought, but
Was it Casamayor?
I'm not sure. I'm going to find out. I'm looking at his record right now.
Joel Casamayor was exciting. His fight with Juan Manuel Marquez was exciting. Juan Diaz is exciting. I don't remember if this guy would be in a bad fight. So going in there and anytime you get to fight a guy like that, it has the makings to be a good fight. And even in an effort where you don't get your hand raised, I mean, if you stand there and you put on a good action fight, that opens a lot of doors. In fact,
absolutely.
A friend of mine,
while we're doing this, I have my computer logged on. There's a online coverage tonight of a flight down in Mexico. Who's the featherweight, Johnny Gonzalez, who's defending his title against a very good friend of mine from Philadelphia, who I used to train with, Rogers Matagua. And I remember Rogers when he would always fight great fights. Like, I remember he even got some times on ESPN, and he even had a fight on you know, network television when they were trying to bring that back on Sundays. And he wasn't always winning, but he was always so exciting, he'd always get another fight. And he turned it into a title fight with Juan Manuel Lopez, and he almost won it. Now he's getting another one. So, hey, whenever you put on a good fight, people will pay to see you. I mean, I'm a fan more than anything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you look at Arturo Gatti. I mean, the guy was a warrior. He was, you know, he came to fight. And I definitely, you know, that's why I took these are good opportunities for me against Cassidy's, was for the, you know, for the world title bout. Another fight against Robert Guerrero was another good opportunity. And I felt, you know, obviously there are different weight classes. They were bigger than me. They felt bigger. They looked bigger in there. Now I feel comfortable. My weight, I went 30. I think this is where, you know, I could definitely be a champion and be more successful at this weight for now.
What would you say your ultimate goal is in the sport?
Not just be a champion, but, you know, to go back and, you know, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, in the future, you know, I'll be hoping I have some kids by then, so I want to look back and just say, you know, my father was a, you know, to remember as a champion, he was a great fighter, you know, he went in there with the best. He might have lost some of the best, but he gave good fights and he had a lot of heart. Just be remembered as one of the good fighters out there, like a bunch of fighters out there right now being remembered. You know, I just want to definitely go out there and give him my best.
All right. Yeah, well, I can tell you from experience, just being a college boxer, you know, people recognize that and they give you respect just for putting on the gloves and fighting anybody at any level, I think. But as far as, you know, a little bit more widespread, obviously as a professional, you're gonna just with what you've already done, you're gonna get a lot of people that will talk about you into their old age that they saw you fight or you know, you had a good career as a fighter.
Yeah, well, hopefully this is the beginning. I hope there's, you know, I think there's more to see from me, and I think you guys will see more from me, and everyone else would see more from me at this weight class. You know, I'm 29 right now, and I still feel really young and feel good, and, you know, I got quite some time left. You know, not much, but, you know, we got to get the, you know, the ball going. That's why we had this tough fight against Rocky. You know, we got to beat him, you know, to open up bigger opportunities and made for a world title. So we're definitely focused on the fight. We know it's an important fight for me, and Rocky knows that well too. So it's an MP, a really, really exciting fight. So I just can't wait for Friday to go out there and really just get back in the ring.
Well, 29 is the new 18 in boxing.
That's the way I look at it.
You see guys like Hopkins doing it till he's almost 50. I mean, it's like,
yeah,
a lot of these guys, you know, especially considering the whole lack of an American heavyweight champion, a lot of guys have come back from deep retirement and done well. So to show you, we live in different times now. And,
absolutely, you know.
Fight my just, take care of yourself.
I think it's all, it comes down to, hey, take care of yourself. It's all, I mean, age is just a number, but I'm sure like Bernard and everyone else, Mayweather, they're in the gym all the time, they're taking care of themselves, they're eating right, they're not out there, you know, staying up late at night, whether they're involved with alcohol or drugs, they don't do any of that, and that's what makes them what they are, and I just want to do it, so I want to be that active, that's who I am, and I give it 100% of what I do, always try my best, and as long as I give 100%, whatever happens, I can live with that, just to say I give my best.
Right. Now, what would you say you love most about the sport of boxing?
Man, that's a good question. think just the whole preparation, I think you got these 2 months of just hard work. You're so dedicated, and then it all comes down to just one night. You got people that start camping 2 months, 3 months, and you got all these months and all these days and weeks combined, and it comes to one night to be the best, to be, 100% and perform at your best. I think that's what makes a sport, being in there one-on-one is nobody else, not a team sport, it's you and against the other fighter. The people in the corner just giving you advice, but at the end of the day, it's just you and him. And I think that's what makes this sport exciting to me. It's a huge challenge, and you're willing to step up to the challenge. That alone, and just a fan too, the kind of feedback you get from them, maybe just taking a picture with them, signing an autograph, they get excited, and it feels good to be, work hard for, to step up in the ring and get that response. That's a wonderful feeling.
Awesome. Yeah, there's not too many other sports where it's one-on-one like that. The only one I think of off the top of my head is tennis, maybe golf.
But yeah.
It's one-on a bunch of people in golf, It's
yeah.
Plus, you get a caddy, too.
Yeah. Yeah, you got a caddy. You don't have to make way. You don't have to train. Be smart.
Right.
I'm sure some of those sports are really intense. I'm sure tennis the next day they're hurting, they're sore. This is a tough business, taking punches, getting hit, and, sooner or later it catches up to you, takes a toll on you. And football players as well, they're a team, but they take some severe hits, severe injuries, and they gotta perform well, it's tough. So,
I was joking around with some of my coworkers a few weeks ago. We have one guy, he got in a bad bike accident about a month or so ago, did a tumbler off there, broke his nose, broke a couple ribs, busted himself up pretty good. Had another guy that I work with the same night, was playing basketball, pickup basketball with some friends, and he's rolled his ankle over pretty bad, and they both missed a couple days of work. I said, boy, you guys got to get into a safer sport like me. I'm like, you box. I said, exactly. You don't see me missing work, do you?
The coach for Air Force Academy, when I spent my 1 year out there in Colorado Springs, he used to be adamant that none of us on the boxing team or associated with the boxing team should ever go skiing. He was so worried about people getting injured skiing.
Yeah.
But not boxing. Sport overall, if you think about it. I remember when I was wrestling, our coach would tell us stories about, there are more severe injuries in all the other sports. And you'd think wrestling, because it's sort of a combat sport, you'd have a lot of injuries, but you really don't. And I think a lot of that is a tribute to how much emphasis is put on just being in shape before you even get in.
Exactly. You're getting prepared mentally, physically. And there's so much into it. Yeah, and I agree. I think that's true. And it's funny you mentioned skiing, because I'm just a huge fan of snowboarding. I snowboard a lot. I didn't get to last year, but I usually do a couple times out of the year. I love snowboarding, and it's one of my favorite things to do as a hobby. And you shouldn't snowboard. But I wear a helmet, well protected, my wrist and everything. I don't do anything crazy, no jumps. I just kind of relax and enjoy the ride and cruise it down. So it's,
I think you worry more about your tailbone than your head. When I actually used to work as a ski instructor up in New Hampshire, I had a friend who was a big time snowboarder. And he says, we're going to teach you how to snowboard today. So he got me the board and everything. And, of course, thinking I'm an expert skier, so I don't need the regular lesson. He takes me halfway up the mountain and says, let's go. And over the first hill, I nailed my tailbone so hard I couldn't sit down right for a week.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of turned me off to snowboarding. But I think if I gave it another few shots, I'd like it. It's just way too fast for me being a skier. It's like a whole different story, but I definitely see the value of it and the different aspect of it. The speed, number one. You go much faster than here when you get your momentum going.
Yeah, kind of definitely. Kind of just kind of enjoy the ride. That's what I do.
Mm-hmm. But, getting back to boxing, what are you anticipating in this fight? It looks like Rocky's lost a few fights in a row. He's obviously going to be coming out, working hard to win this one. But it seems like he's gone the distance in a lot of those losses. Are you expecting him to try to make it a long fight, or are you just going to go out there and see what happens, do your best?
Well, yeah, I prefer, I know Rocky, lost last three, I believe, but, I expect the best of Rocky just because he lost. I mean, I'm not taking him lightly, and, I know Rocky always comes to fight. That's what I'm expecting. I'm expecting the Rocky to come fight. And, yeah, I think it's, going to be, I'm not predicting anything, but it's going to be a good fight. And he's going to want to try to come and win this fight because I think he needs to redeem himself as well. But I'm expecting the best from him. I'm just going to see what happens and have my, come next night, I'll be ready to, whatever he's ready to bring to the table, I'll be right there, right next to him. And if it's a fight, and Ty will fight, or I can do something else, be boxing or do whatever. We'll just see in the first round or two. I expect the best of Rocky.
All right. Now, do you have a favorite punch?
Actually, I hit both. The right hand and my right hand, I hit hard with the right hand, and I hit hard with that hand. And I think that's the main key to my jab. My jab is I have a really good jab, and I think you'll see that Friday night. I have a really strong jab. So I think it's going to be really, really effective for the fight.
Awesome. That was always my favorite punch as a fighter. I just kind of developed a style where I'm always throwing that jab out there. And
yeah.
How many times after not boxing anymore competitively, I'll be, at a party and somebody brings some gloves or whatever. And not so much recently, but a few years ago when I was, going around drinking a lot, having a lot of fun, being a 20-something kid, I'd go and say, I'll fight you one-handed. And I'd go out there with just a jab hand and fight people. And they'd just be in awe just because, there's just so much you can do with that jab, keeping people off, keeping people from throwing a punch.
Absolutely. And then if you have that, everything sets up the jab. So you got that. Just imagine a good jab coming back with the right, some combination, it could be very deadly. I think the jab, you can win a fight just with the jab alone if you have a really, really good jab. Just constantly just hitting him with it and landing every good shot with it. That's what I have. I have a really good jab. And I've heard some people just with my jab, or people even told me, man, you hit hard with that jab. And actually, it reminds you kind of, I've actually been told that it reminds me of like how Oscar De La Hoya used to throw a jab really hard. And when he had it, when he fought, who was it? Gonzalez, his first name. Forgot his name, he was just kept pounding him with the jab. Mexican fighter from Mexico. I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Gonzalez.
Job for the Rain Man. Tony?
Excuse me? Yeah, I remember that. I'm working on that right now. Okay, so it was De La Hoya and he was jabbing the shit out of the guy.
Gonzalez is the last name, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Miguel Angel Gonzalez.
Yeah, Miguel.
He beat him up pretty bad. Unanimous decision.
I just remember that jab was just, oh my God, he was pounding with that jab all night, and that was like his weapon. That's all he had to use the whole night, and and that's how I feel my jab is. When I throw it to do some damage, and so I'm very, very comfortable with my left hand, and I think I'm trying to set everything up behind that. So.
Yeah, I find in a lot of fights, a lot of people don't realize there's two different types of jabs too. Like when I first learned how to box, the coach taught us the power jab and the quick jab, and the big difference between the two. And there's not a lot of fighters out there who use both equally, or in the right situation sometimes. one of the guys that I always used to like. He hasn't been as great in recent years, but Chad Dawson has that really constant jab type of style that worked for him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he does.
He's about to fight Bernard Hopkins and really put it to the test.
Yeah, October, yeah.
I'll tell you, some of the guys that I'm training now, and on the one video I just did a few weeks ago training some of these guys, the way I kind of described it, because the one kid, he's tall, and he's got quick feet, and he's got quick hands, but he's not stepping with his jab right, and he's not getting that proper snap off. So I've been working on him with it. And the one thing I told him in one of his last sessions was, he's 17 years old. I said, do you watch baseball? Yeah, I love baseball. I said, okay. Go watch a pitcher the next time he pitches. And I said, he'll throw a fastball at 95 miles an hour, and then I'll throw a change at about 82 miles an hour. I said, your jab can be the same thing. You know, you vary it up. Sometimes you might put it out there to, you know, just get the range. You might use the stick in the mouth. You know, watch that. Learn a little bit about that. I mean, everything doesn't have to be all quick. Some of them you want to punch it down the mouth and make it hurt. It's a lot of timing, too.
Absolutely.
I hope he's taking it to heart. You know, the jab is a great punch, but I was always a hook machine. I'm a Philadelphia guy. You know, I've lived and died off the left hook.
Yeah, I definitely believe that. I mean, you need to change up the speed on that. The jab sometimes would be a fast or a hard, stiff jab. You know, you want to change up the speed because a good fighter will figure that out. He'll know his timing. And be like, oh, he throws nothing but fast shots, and he'll time you. So you changing it up on the speed, you know, or just touching it with there sometimes, coming with a hard jab, it's going to confuse him a little bit, and he's going to think twice about throwing a certain punch. So I definitely believe in definitely switching up the speed on a jab or some punches at least.
There was an actual MMA fight that you get stopped on a jab. Not too long ago, I think it was last year or a few months ago, Forrest Griffin fought one of the best MMA guys out there, Anderson Silva, and it ended in the first round on a hard jab, knocked him out.
I didn't see that fight. I did not see.
That's funny. There's a lot of guys in MMA, I hate watching sometimes because when they do the stand-up, they don't have the best boxing background. And any of these guys even know what a jab is, it seems like.
Yeah.
But,
you know, I've always said that if MMA fighters are really, really good in the ground, the grappling, if you get a fighter that can box well and throw good punches, he's going to be a very, very tough MMA fighter to beat. And I think who has a little bit of that is George St. Pierre. He has a little bit of the boxing.
He's working with Freddie Roach.
Yeah, and I've seen his last couple fights, and he's looking good standing up. He's throwing his punches right, combinations, and he's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, I hope we see a lot more of those guys going to the boxing trainers for that type of extra incentive to their fight game. But it seems like what we're seeing a lot of is the fans actually like it better when these guys stand and trade punches or kicks or knees or whatever. But as long as they're on the feet, you know, it's more exciting for them. It's not so much as it was in the beginning. The beginning it was worse. Like we had a lot of MMA fans back in the day when, you know, it was first starting to get popular, where if the fight would go to the ground, people would just boo right away. Now at least fans are a little bit more patient, but they still love to see a toe-to-toe punch you in the face fight.
Well,
that's just a given. But as far as boxing in general goes, what do you think in general about the popularity of boxing? And as we talked about, MMA is kind of gaining a lot of popularity. What do you think about the strength of the sport compared to MMA, and what about its future? Do you think it's got a strong future and there's a lot of guys out there we haven't heard about that are going to come up and make big news?
Absolutely. I think boxing, so you got these young fighters. I mean, you know, you still got those a good bond at 122 pounds. Now you got the 26 pounds, 130, 135. Now it used to be the heavyweights. Now you got these lower classes that are making a lot of noise, a lot of champions, and they're starting to move up in weight. So I think, you know, once Manny Pacquiao, Mayweather's gone, you know, you got younger fighters coming up, and they're going to be huge. I think the big next stars are superstars and megastars. Definitely. I think MMA is doing well. I think they're doing well with the promotion as far as promoting more of their fighters on their undercard whatsoever. But I still think boxing is doing a really, really good job. You know, and I think it just takes two to dance. You know, two also sometimes it's not just one fighter. It takes two to dance. It also takes two promoters to make a big, huge fight. And I think that's what we're just waiting for. I think boxing is still on the rise and still doing well.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. There's been some stories in recent weeks about MMA fighters talking about going over to boxing. And the UFC has been quick to snatch up both of the guys that I recently heard about who said that. Nick Diaz, he wanted to fight, I can't think of the guy's name right now, Jeff Lacy. And they almost had the contract signed, and then Dana White said, no, we're going to bring you over to the UFC and make you fight George St. Pierre. And then they changed it. But then we had Alistair Overeem, the guy who was the K-1 champion, talking about fighting David Haye, you know, getting known over the
board. Oh, wow.
And they signed him. UFC picked him up to prevent that. So they're obviously a little bit scared about that. But at the same time, they're making hand over fist hundreds of millions of dollars on TV deals. And they don't seem to be passing it on to the fighters. They're still able to pull in, you know, multi-million-dollar salaries for one fight if it's big enough. And these guys in MMA, even in the top league, nobody's ever made $1 million for one single fight.
Yeah. So
it's kind of interesting to see that the pay issue
isn't
so big.
Yeah, it is.
But as far as this big fight this weekend, what do you think? What's your pick in the Mayweather versus Ortiz battle there?
It's a tough one. You know, he proved himself a lot. A guy like that, you just kind of give him all the respect because he did prove a lot of people wrong. Dominating Burr the way he did. I think he's hungry right now. He's hungry and he wants to go out there and be the first one, just like everyone else, to beat Mayweather. And he's strong, he's young. But then again, Mayweather, I still feel he hasn't lost his timing. He hasn't lost his speed, even though he's 30, what is it, 33? How old are you, 33 or 34?
Yeah, 34.
Yeah, I feel like he hasn't lost that speed and that timing. It's going to be tough, you know. Like he says, there's no blueprint to be made where there is, and it's just a tough fight. Honestly, Victor has a huge, huge chance just because he's young and strong. He's a bigger guy in there. Is he going to be able to? The thing about Mayweather, he can adapt. He can adapt to getting things done in the later rounds, and he has experience and he has the quickness. So, I just don't know. I really don't know. I'm just going to have to wait and see. I'm actually very anxious and excited to see this fight as well, just like everyone in the world. And so I think it's going to be a really good fight.
Yeah,
I just wrote a preview on the fight. I do that for a lot of the big fights. I'll write the previews and the predictions. I try to do it. I kind of analyze everything: strengths, weaknesses, styles, how they match up against other styles. And the way I see this happening, I mean, this is the youngest and quite possibly biggest guy Mayweather's ever fought. Ortiz is still a growing kid. I mean, when he fought De La Hoya, De La Hoya started at 130 pounds, and he was 37 years old when they fought. Shane Mosley started off at 135 pounds, was 38 when they fought. So you're looking at a lot of guys that, even though they may have been physically bigger, they were older guys. You're looking at a guy who's just, moved up to 147. He was killing himself to make 140. He's a big kid. He's strong. He's got quick hands. He's left-handed. So that's the first thing that Ortiz can really use to his advantage, because Mayweather likes to shoulder roll as a defense, but you really can't do that as much as against a left-hander because it's coming from the opposite side, that straight left.
Yeah.
If you try to shoulder roll, you're actually putting yourself right into the punch's harm. What I think will be the downfall for Ortiz here is, and I watched a lot of videos on him, in writing this article, was when he attacks with his hands wide open and his chin up. And I think that is going to be, what his problem is going to be. I think he will at one point actually stagger Mayweather, maybe in like the third round or so. He's going to catch him with a couple shots. But I think he's going to leave himself too open, and that's going to be his downfall, and Mayweather will progressively adapt to his style. But the biggest variable in this fight, and I've said this ever since it's been signed, will we see the old Floyd Mayweather? Or, since he hasn't fought in 16 months and only two times in almost 4 years, will we see an old Floyd Mayweather?
That is a question. we'll have to see. I mean, he always fights. I mean, you know, which kind of gets my attention about him is that, you know, he's off for so long, but then he comes back and it's like he never left. His timing is so well, it's so good, and I think if Victor can hurt him, he's strong enough to hurt him, but he's gonna have to do it early in the round because then Mayweather's gonna figure him out. And he's going to have a game plan. And I think he's got to be, exactly like you said, he's got to be careful of him coming in with the attack so much because everyone knows that Mayweather is a good counterpuncher. And I think that's what Mayweather is going to be waiting for him to come in and make a mistake and make him pay.
Yeah, I actually got to see Mayweather in person there at his open workout out here in Vegas a couple weeks ago here now, and he looked all right, you know, training and everything like that, but the real evidence of how good he is, I think, came from the chatter from his sparring partners, and I overheard a lot of the conversation with some of the news outlets interviewing Roger Mayweather, and he talked about how some of Ortiz's former opponents have been in the Mayweather gym. And have done as well against Floyd as they did against Ortiz, even though, you know, they like guys like Lamont Peterson lost.
Yeah.
But Floyd, it's pretty much been untouchable, you know, according to some of his sparring guys there. So it's definitely going to be a good fight, but I think Floyd's takes it on experience and skill. And going to be one of those days if Ortiz just puts it all together and has a perfect night, he can win it. But it's interesting, really, to see that the experts out there are all picking Ortiz, it seems. You know, everybody wants him to win, too, I think. A lot of people hate him.
everyone wants to fight with a loser. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, it can happen. It can happen. Boxing, anything can happen. And Victor definitely has the strength, and you know, him being a southpaw makes things a little bit more tricky and difficult. So, as you know, he's Mayweather had a hard time with Zeb Judah as a southpaw, but the thing about Zeb Judah is he faded towards the end of the round, and Mayweather figured him out and he started picking him apart. So we'll have to see on Saturday.
Well, Vicente, it's been great chatting with you. We're coming to the end of the show here, so we're going to have to say goodbye, but we'll definitely keep an eye out on you, and we'll wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
You didn't need it for the
Thank you.
Guys fight.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right.
Good talking to you guys, too.
All right, you too.
All right.
All right. Well, Rich, this is my ending. This is the tornado when I'm signing out, man.
All right, I'm going to watch the Mitagua fight. I got it streaming now, thanks to your link. So we'll talk about that next week.
Yes, we will.
Good night, folks. Thanks for stopping by. That's it. We're done. Till next week. Adios.